The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Welcome to the Free Library of Philadelphia Online. My name is Jason Freeman, and I'm pleased to be here to introduce tonight's guest, Catherine Price. Catherine Price is the author of How to Break Up with Your Phone, a book that, according to Refinery29, gives practical advice on how to forge a healthier relationship with technology without the fear-mongering. Her other books include The Parody Travel Guide, 101 Places Not to See Before You Die, Vitamania, The Big Sur Bakery Cookbook, and Mindfulness, a Journal. A public speaker, teacher, and consultant, Price has contributed work to The Best American Science Writing, The New York Times, The Los Angeles Times, Outside, and Men's Journal, among many other periodicals. She joins us tonight with The Power of Fun, How to Feel Alive Again. A mix of science and personal experience, this more useful than ever guide argues that having fun is crucial to our mental and physical health and presents a practical guide for having more of it. Adam Grant praises it thusly. If you feel like modern adulthood has sucked the fun out of your life, you'll find hope in these pages. With clarity and levity, Catherine Price illuminates why our days are so dull and how we can have more play and more joy. Tonight's author will be joined in conversation with Gretchen Rubin, one of today's most influential and thought-provoking observers of happiness and human nature. She's known for her ability to distill and convey complex ideas with humor and clarity in a way that's accessible to a wide audience. Her many books include the blockbuster New York Times bestsellers, The Four Tendencies, and Better Than Before. Her book, The Happiness Project, has sold more than 1 million copies, has been published in more than 30 languages, and spent more than 2 years on the New York Times bestseller list, including at number one. So without further ado, Catherine, Gretchen, thank you both so much for being here, and the screen is all yours.
Well, thank you, Jason. And it is such a pleasure to be here tonight to talk about this book, The Power of Fun. There is so much to talk about. Catherine, I'm really excited that we get this opportunity to hear about fun. And let's kick it off with the biggest, most obvious question, which is, what is fun? What is true fun? Because you have a very specific definition of what you're talking about when you're talking about the power of fun and why we need more fun. What is this mysterious true fun?
That's a good question to start with, because it might seem like it's an obvious question that doesn't need to be asked. What is fun? Because we use the word fun all the time in our everyday speech. But one thing I noticed when I started to ask people from around the world to share with me anecdotes from their own lives, they would describe, I believe as I put it in my initial surveys, as so fun. It was very scientific. I had yet come up with the term true fun. I was like, tell me about something that stands out as so fun. Yes. I did not say it with that accent, but yes. Yeah. But so I was reading through these anecdotes, and it was really interesting because they weren't just lighthearted pleasure or amusement. And to this day, if I read through the stories that people share with me, I find myself smiling, but also almost tearing up. There's some deep kind of joyful energy running through them that doesn't match up with that dictionary definition. So I realized if I was going to write a book about this feeling, I needed to try to propose a different definition. And the definition that I came up with, which I then ran by these people who had shared their stories with me to make sure it wasn't just Catherine coming up with her own ideas, it actually was validated, was the idea that true fun, as I call it, is the confluence of three states. And those states are playfulness, connection, and flow, which I can tell you more about. But I just realized I have a high-tech slide, guys. I made slides. Look at this. Here you go.
There you go. Yeah.
So this is my Venn diagram. I used a plate to make those circles.
You have nice handwriting.
Sometimes. Thank you. In this occasion, it's not bad. Yeah. But, so each of these states is great on their own. And they're great if they happen two at a time, if you're in one of these little things. But then if they all happen at once, you have what I consider to be true fun. And I'm happy to explain more about those three states. But that matched with what people's experiences that they told me about.
I think this is really interesting. And I do want you to go through all three, because they're not exactly what you might sort of automatically think of. You're thinking about it in a very nuanced way. So I think the most obvious is playfulness. So explain a little bit what you mean by when there's the quality of playfulness and in some fun.
Well, it's important to clarify that because most adults, if they hear playfulness, just you can see their entire bodies kind of tense up and they just feel very uncomfortable because they think you're telling them to act like children, you know, God forbid, or play charades or go LARPing or something like that. It's not none of that is necessary. It's really just more about your attitude. So it's bringing a lighthearted spirit to what you do, doing things just for the sake of doing them, and not worrying too much about the outcome. You know, letting go of some of our performance anxiety and our desire for perfectionism, and just doing things without worrying about it. And that's strangely foreign to many of us as adults.
And then connection. I mean, you return over and over again to what this element of connection. So why, what is it about connection that gives kind of this added fun to it, to an event, to something that we're doing?
Well, it was interesting when I collected these stories from people, and then I asked people if they would, I had like a whole long list of check boxes that they could pick, like what terms or what descriptors would accurately apply to what you just told me. And one of the top ones that people picked, it was basically tied with laughter, was a special shared experience. And I thought that was really interesting because I do think it's possible for some people to have fun alone, because there is a sense of connection that can come with your authentic, being connected with your authentic self, which unfortunately is also kind of distant from us a lot of times. But in most stories that people shared with me, there was another living creature involved, usually a person, sometimes like a dog or a cat. And it was true for introverts as well as extroverts.
Yes, I thought that was very interesting. Yes, you found that.
Yeah. So I asked people straight up, like, what, if anything, surprised you about what you just told me? I obviously was just throwing questions at these. If anyone out there took these surveys, just thank you, because there were a lot of questions. I think it's because it was the summer of 2020. And what else were people doing? Because we all were just stuck at home. But I really appreciate it. So I'm like, what surprised you? And a number of people said something along the lines of, I'm a self-proclaimed introvert, and yet all the stories I just told you involved other people. And it made me think that maybe the difference between extroverts and introverts when it comes to fun is not whether or not we want to have a shared experience with someone else, but it's more the type of connection. Do we like a small group or an intimate group or just one friend? Or I think sometimes introverts might actually like the anonymity that comes from a large crowd. So it's less about the connection and more the type of relationship that I think differentiates the two.
And then how about flow?
So flow is a psychological term that refers to the experience where you're so wrapped up and totally absorbed and present in your experience that you lose track of time. So it's basically like being in the zone. It's important to distinguish it from its alter ego, which was known as junk flow, which is the state you get into when, say, you're watching Netflix for 6 hours straight. And yes, you've lost track of time, but you're not actively engaged in it. So flow is a very active state. And the most common example people give is an athlete in the middle of a game, you know, like anyone doing anything in the Olympics in flow. But you can also have flow in your everyday experiences, like even now, you know, having a conversation where I'm really present with you and paying full attention. That's an example of flow. And well, it's important to note you can't be distracted and be in flow. Like anything that distracts you kicks you out of flow.
Well, I was very interested that you said that the quality of judgment is something that should not be present, because when I was, of course, like everybody, like when I'm reading this, I'm thinking about my own experience and is this fun? And is that not fun? And I was realizing that a lot of times when I'm doing things like that, there is an element of judgment, like brainstorming. You give a couple of examples of like when people are sort of in a conversation where there's sort of like a brainstorming element to it. And I think of like, well, that there's a lot of judgment going on. Like, is this a good idea or a bad idea? Or I'm doing something creatively, like writing my book of aphorisms, which is like, for me, like something that I get very deep enjoyment from, but it's all about judgment. And like, is this better? Is this better? So am I understanding judgment correctly? And that really is something that is kind of a distraction, or are there different kinds of judgment that you might bring into flow and into true fun?
I'm not sure about judgment and flow, although I would say that by definition, judgment does require you to step back to a certain degree. You can't actually be fully present because you have to have that perspective from which to judge. So actually, I would say that judgment and flow do seem antithetical. It definitely doesn't work with fun, because fun is really a letting go and a release, and you're in touch with your authentic self and you're not caring about the outcome. The moment any element of judgment comes into that, it's going to kick you out. Because you can't have that little voice on your shoulder in the moments when you have true fun. And I encourage everyone listening tonight, you know, whether it's right now or later this evening, to reflect on your own life, to do that exercise of call to mind 3 to 5 experiences that you would describe as so fun, and just notice what kind of experiences emerge and think about how you felt in those moments. Because I'm willing to bet, I don't bet unless I'm very confident in things, and I'm willing to bet that you're not going to have the moments where you were trying to take the perfect selfie for Instagram and like judging whether or not you looked good in that light to get, you know, like that's not fun.
So why don't you throw out some examples of what you think are kind of like paradigmatic examples of fun, and then maybe some things where you're like, well, maybe you would think that this was fun, but it's not fun. For instance, I love to read, but reading really isn't true fun. It's very enjoyable and everything, but it doesn't really meet your like the three things. So that's interesting. So what are sort of like great examples of the kind of things that are true fun? And then maybe what are some things that you might think were fun, but you don't quite think are fun?
Well, the reading one is a good one to start with, because it makes a big point that I definitely want to emphasize, which is that there's true fun, right? There's what I call fake fun. Yeah, which is, we can get into more, but it's basically things that are marketed to us as fun, true fun, but they're not going to result in playful connected flow. That should be eliminated or reduced. But there's a middle category of stuff that you just love doing. And I think that sometimes when people read the book, they think I'm saying that reading is bad, or like watching TV is bad if you really enjoy it. So I just want to clarify, if you truly enjoy it, go for it. It's just to be intentional about it. Yeah. But if you and I've seen a lot of people go through that same process you kind of just went through, of being like, I love reading. And then they think for a second, and then they think, but is it actually fun?
Right. It's enjoyable. It's valuable. Yeah. But you're trying to talk about a very specific kind of activity that has very certain qualities to it.
Yeah, I would actually say experience rather than activity, because I think one thing we often get wrong when we think about fun is that it's dependent on the activity. So just
this is a fascinating point that you make. Yes.
Oh, I'm excited. So we're going for things that create joyful energy. And I think it's important to realize that the very same activity at different times in different contexts can have radically different results in terms of our mood. So if you had remember when we used to have dinner parties? Like if you've gone to a dinner party with the same group of people one night and it was amazingly fun, and that's something you would tell me about if I asked you about the so fun experiences, same group of people, different night, not quite as fun. So, right, it's the same thing, but it's really, there's something magical about fun that you can't. So in my book, I'm trying to balance the fact that a lot of fun depends on serendipity with the fact that I do think it's actually more under our control than we think. So to answer your initial question, I don't think there's any one activity I can tell you that would be fun all the time for anyone. And I also think we have different activities that are more likely than others to generate fun. But to give you an example from my own life that inspired the book, you know, so I'd written this book, How to Break Up with Your Phone, and I felt really good about having a better relationship with my devices. I was spending less time on my phone. And I really came away with this message that our lives are what we pay attention to, because we only remember what we pay attention to, and we're only going to experience what we pay attention to. So every moment that I'm spending like on my phone is a moment and I'm deciding how I want to spend my life. Felt really good about that. Then I didn't realize there was this next step, which is, what do you actually want to pay attention to? And I had this kind of existential moment actually in this very room where I had a free hour and I didn't know what to do. And I ended up asking myself this question. Sorry, this is tangential, but I will get to what you're asking me about.
This sounds very fascinating.
Okay. Which was, and I encourage people to ask themselves this, what's something you say to do, but you say you want to do, but you supposedly don't have time for? And in my case, my answer was, I had a guitar. I played piano since I was a kid. I never learned to play the guitar because I didn't have time, which really means I just chose not to make the time for it. And I was like, I'm going to learn the guitar. So I signed up for a class, and for Philadelphia people, I signed up at Mr. John's Music in South Philly. It's a children's music studio, but it's an adult class, obviously, because that'd be weird if it was just me and 5-year-olds. and I went to the class and I discovered that it was creating this sense of energy and lightness and joy that went way beyond the skill. Like, it wasn't the skill, but I was feeling so joyful during it. It actually carried through for the rest of the week. And that inspired this real interest in and commitment to playing music with other people. So I think actually some of the people on this call might be people I play music with regularly, and we've made a point of getting together through the pandemic. And for me, that is a activity that does typically often generate fun nearly every time.
Because it's playful connection and flow.
Because it's playful connected flow. But someone else might not find that fun at all. Like someone who doesn't play music or is feeling too self-conscious, that's not going to be fun.
Right. And what are things that like people think of as being fun Well, maybe the question is, what is fake fun? So like you sort of touched on that. What are the kinds of things that kind of seduce us into thinking that they're fun, but you would say are fake fun?
Well, the telltale sign of fake fun is that we feel compulsively drawn to it, but we don't actually feel playful or connected or in flow while we're doing it. It's kind of like the junk food of fun. And the reason I felt it necessary to come up with that term and to get into such, you know, get into the weeds with all this is just, as we said at the outset, we don't have a good definition of fun. And so we're just so vulnerable to anyone who wants to try to convince us to give them our time and attention by saying their product is fun. So the most prevalent example of that would be social media. You know, I don't think anyone, if they actually, I have collected thousands of stories of fun from people around the world. None of them have been like, you know what? It was those 2 hours I spent on Instagram. Like, no one says that. But yet we do that for fun, quote unquote, in our leisure time.
Okay, but we also read. So maybe it's not fun, but it's enjoyable.
Exactly. So that gets to the idea of like the three categories of like right. the true fun,
right.
the legitimately enjoyable and worth your time, even though maybe it's not like full on playful connected flow. But right. fake fun is really like it's the junk. It's where you're getting tricked. It's bad. You don't want to do so that. I think that it's useful to think of it that way, because if you can identify and notice when you're engaging in fake fun, it's low hanging fruit. And it helps you because right now everyone feels so pressed for time and so overwhelmed. And even some people on this call might be feeling like, great, fun. I don't have time for that. I'm too overwhelmed. I encourage you to look at your screen time statistics and see how much yep. time you spent, if not on social media, doom scrolling the news, you know, something else right. where it wasn't essential, it wasn't productive, and you didn't enjoy it. So
right.
low hanging fruit.
Right. So kind of look for the loose change under your sofa cushions for the time. So you talked about this, that you had this moment when you realized, I want to learn to play the guitar. And it led to this fun. Have there been other things that you've done in your own life where you're like, you have mindfully sort of picked certain things and then maybe kind of really moved away from other things as you sort of saw the bang for the buck that you get, from different kinds of experiences?
Well, certainly.
Notice that I didn't say activities, experiences. There you go.
Right there.
There you go. Learning.
Exactly. No, I would say, no one thinks email is fun, but I just waste so much time on email. So really trying to carve out time. Like, I would say the biggest thing is to reevaluate our relationships with our devices, which may sound very obvious coming from someone who's wrote a book right. called How to Break Up with Your Phone. Right.
Yeah.
But I really believe it, because everything about our devices and our apps, and I'm not a anti-technology at all, but there's so many strong business incentives to try to get us to spend time on other people's apps, making money for them. We have to create better boundaries for that. So to protect our own time. So even something like, you know, I've started trying not to check my email until 10 in the morning. I can't tell you what a difference that's made in my mornings. I have so much time. Time seems to slow down. I'm more productive in my actual work. And then that frees up time for things I would like to try or do, my actual priorities, whether it's for fun or for, you know, anything, self-betterment. I also do think kind of what you were alluding to, there are certain things I've tried, quote, for fun, that I then realized, nope, that is never going to lead to fun for me.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest ones for me, I love improv comedy in the sense of watching it and in the sense of the yes and philosophy that I think is a really useful way to approach life of responding to what life throws your way by accepting it and building on it. But I took an improv comedy class after college and it was so bad. I don't get embarrassed easily. And it was horrible. Like, you're supposed to say yes. And when someone, like if someone says I'm Santa Claus, you're supposed to say yes. And then you do something else. You're not supposed to say, no, you're not. And then just stand there in silence until they turn off the lights and say scene on you, which is what I did. So I would say the takeaway for me from that is that it's important to try new things when you're trying to find I can talk about fun magnets, but new things that might generate fun for you. But if something truly isn't working for you, it's okay to let it go. You know, it took me a long time to realize that I didn't have to sign up for the next round of improv comedy.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, I want to get to fun magnets, but before we do, there's something interesting in what you said about the self-consciousness. And I think many people, when you speak to people who are actors or who do improv, it's almost like they shed themselves and they can kind of inhabit a different person. And so for them, it's almost like they're less self-conscious when they're acting or performing. And you were saying how perhaps somebody would feel self-conscious when they were playing guitar. You did not feel that way. So I wonder if part of this flow thing is like, in what way do you kind of lose yourself? And as you say, it can be very different for different people just because of the way they're wired or sort of like what skills they have and what they like to do. And so maybe you have to experiment a little bit. Like some people lose themselves in being a wonderful host and being, you know, so hospitable. And then other people, like all they can think about is, you know, do I have enough water glasses or whatever? And they can't lose themselves in it. So maybe it's this element of how do you lose your sense of self-consciousness? That's interesting.
Yeah, very much so. I should clarify, I do feel self-conscious playing guitar in many contexts, but there's certain ones where I don't. So I seek those out. But that is exactly what you're talking about, which is that so I would argue that the definition of true fun is universal in the feeling of playful connected flow, but each person achieves that state differently.
Sure.
Something that allows me, I think you made a really good point in terms of the ability to lose your self-consciousness and to just be free and be your authentic self in that moment. Something that a context that allows me to do that may be very different for you. And I think you make a really good point with the performers. Like I am not a performer. If you ask me to pretend or act, I just can't. But for someone who loves doing improv, I think you're totally right. That is how they feel free. They feel more self-conscious not pretending.
Yes.
Right? So I think it's very interesting to start thinking about and this gets the idea of what I call fun magnets. Like what are
Okay.
Yeah.
Dive into fun magnets. Yes.
Okay.
So, because I think people would be very interested to hear about this. Yeah.
So playful connected flow is universal, but each of us finds it and achieves it in different ways, right? So I think that each of us personally has a collection of what I call fun magnets. And those are the people and the activities and the settings that most often generate fun for us personally.
And just to pause, because that's like a three thing and it's helpful. I found it to be a helpful thing. People, settings, activities.
And activities, yeah.
Because as you say, activities are not fun. Like,
yes.
I thought
listening.
Yeah. Yes. No. Yeah. It's a great book. What can I say? I remember a lot of it. Yeah. Activities are not fun, but they are part of what can create a fun experience.
Exactly. Like the activity itself is not generating the fun, but some activities are more likely than others to generate fun for you personally. So if you can figure out the themes that unite your past experiences of fun, you can start to figure out what things pop up and again and again. Are there certain friends with whom you very often have fun, in large part because something about their company allows you to let go and you feel comfortable in your own skin? Are there particular settings? Like for me, summer camps are very conducive to fun. Are there particular activities? So I know, for example, again, like playing music with this particular group of people is very, it's like 100% guaranteed. I guess I'm not supposed to say it's totally guaranteed. 99.99999% guaranteed to be fun. And I think what's really useful about identifying these fun magnets and this collection of fun magnets is that it helps us take fun from this abstract, nebulous concept that seems magical and that we can't control into something that we still can't really control, but we can set the stage for it. So it's much like romance, where you try too hard, it'll run away, but you can light some candles. So the practical takeaway there is that if you know that you know your fun magnets, then you actually can make time for them on your calendar. Because it'd be ridiculous if I said, like, I know what I'm going to do on Sunday afternoon. I'm going to have fun from 3 to 6 p.m.
Right.
I just left it at that. Like, that's ridiculous. But if I know one of my fun magnets, I actually can put that on my calendar. And then I can know that I'm much more likely to have fun doing that than I would be if I sat on my couch scrolling through social media, for example.
Right. Like, I'm going to try some new fancy recipe with my daughter. And we'll go to the store and buy the ingredients and come home and make it. And then it's like, okay. Now, why don't you talk about this perhaps oxymoronically named fun audit?
You don't think that sounds fun?
Oh.
A friend who was helping me edit said that doesn't sound fun as a footnote. And
yeah. No, the oxymoron is what makes it fun, right? Because it's surprising.
Yes.
It's unexpected. Yes. Yes. You don't think of that coupling of words.
Yeah. I don't think most audits are actually fun, but the idea is to scan your life to see how much fun you are or are likely right now are not currently having. It's been a challenging time. So that you can begin to, well, track your progress and then go through the process that we've been talking about, which is to say, to think of some of the times in which you had true fun, pull out some of those themes, identify some of your fun magnets. If you're feeling really energetic, you can go a step further, try to figure out some of the characteristics of those things to generate, as you just suggested, new things to try. So the fun audit is trying to get a big picture sense of like what actually brings fun for you personally, the most likely to generate it for you personally. Again, with the ultimate goal of turning it from this abstract concept into something that you feel like, while you can't guarantee it, you can actually really set the stage for it, and you have practical tools to build more fun into your life.
And just to give people sort of a sense, why don't you throw out some, you give a long list of these, maybe suggest some just so people sort of have a sense of what the kinds of things you're talking about.
Sure. So like the characteristics of your fun experience, your fun magnets, I think it was kind of the fun factors, not to throw too many terms at everybody, but your fun factors. So just as an example, like I really enjoy swing dancing. So what is it about that that I enjoy? Well, certainly there's the context in which I do it. If it was a performance or a competition, I don't think I'd enjoy it. There's a particular swing dancing camp that is like very joyful for me. But what's the camp? That's interesting. But there's also characteristics to it. There's music involved. Music is a theme that runs through a lot of my fun magnets. There's physicality involved. There's some element of mastery. There's a feeling of a connection with like one other person and almost spontaneity because you don't know what's going to happen next. And if I start to pull out these characteristics, it can help me think of new things to try, which is helpful just in the broader global sense because novelty is very conducive to fun. But it's also really helpful during the pandemic when, for example, I haven't been able to go to swing dancing camp because it's been canceled for the past 2 years, but I can take these characteristics and use them to brainstorm other things I might want to try. Like last year during a lull in the pandemic, I signed up for a 4-week tap dancing class because I knew that that might have similar elements. And it was great. I really enjoyed that. I'd love to go back to it. I mean, things got, Omicron. But anyway, it can help you generate new ideas for things to try regardless of how restricted your current circumstances might be.
It was interesting because my next book is about the five senses and how we can tap into our five senses. And so I was very interested to see that one of the characteristics was sensuality, which is just like, is there an element that is very pleasing to the senses? And certainly with swing dancing, there's touch and hearing. So it's interesting, how you could kind of recombine elements to generate new ideas. So one of the things I thought was really interesting is when you talked about sort of trying to have fun with someone else, like with your spouse or your sweetheart, say, and you had a very funny list of like some things you found very fun and that he mysteriously did not find fun. But then you were able to sort of do the crossover of what was fun for you and fun for him. And so we're kind of the thing that you could have fun together. So like explain a little bit how you can think about when you're trying to kind of coordinate your fun with somebody else.
Yeah, I think one of the challenges in pursuing more fun for yourself is making sure that it doesn't create resentment in your relationship if you're in a relationship and vice versa. One book I really love is Fair Play by Eve Rodsky about how to better divide up household responsibilities so that there's less resentment and people feel that it's more equitable. And she talks about the concept of making time for what she refers to as unicorn space, which is time for yourself. It actually does have strong overlaps with fun, but she points out a lot of examples from people she's spoken with where one person feels really resentful because the other person is doing that. But the reason that they feel so resentful is that they're not, in this case, like if you're not having fun and your partner or spouse or friend or whatever is, you can start to feel resentful of them. But that's not really their problem. It doesn't mean they're doing something wrong. It probably means you need more. So ideally in a relationship, both parties would be having enough fun to feel energized so that they can support each other. But I think it's interesting to think about how there's different fun magnets within a couple. I was saying like playing music with friends, that's a big fun magnet for me, but my husband doesn't play music. So that's not for him at all. He's really supportive of it, but it's not his fun magnet. He loves going on really intense hikes where you have to carry all your belongings on your back and carry a trowel. That's not really that fun for me. I've got type 1 diabetes, I've got bad knees, and when I come along on a backpacking trip, I make it less fun for him. Like, I'm a wet blanket. I don't want to be a wet blanket. So it's really useful for us to recognize these are two things that we both, like, they're fun magnets for each of us separately. So we should support each other doing them. But then also to think, well, what are the things we really love doing together? Like, what are our joint fun magnets? So I think it can be actually a really useful tool for relationships to reduce resentment and then figure out how to have more fun independently. And then also have the freedom to pursue fun separately.
Because I think for some people, they really do think it's like, we should be having fun together and you should come with me and I should come with you. And that can lead to a lot of conflict because it's just people have different ideas of what they want to do with their time.
It also goes to the point where, like, again, the idea of a wet blanket, like if one person is not all in the experience and is not enjoying themselves, it's not just that they're not going to enjoy it. The person who otherwise would be having fun won't have fun. So it's actually really bad. Like, you don't want to, everyone needs to be in for the experience. If there's someone kind of standing on the side, then it will make people feel self-conscious and they won't be able to be in flow and they won't be as connected or playful. So it just kind of destroys the fun.
Right. Well, so the last thing, and this is a big topic, so we can't go into it tremendously deeply because I want to make sure that we have time for questions from the audience. And I see people are submitting questions, and please do go ahead and submit your questions for Catherine. But why is this good for us? I mean, we should have fun because fun is fun. But that you also point to a lot of research that shows like why this is a really beneficial to us in many, many ways and really serves us well in our lives.
Thank you for asking that, because one of the main pushbacks people present you with when you suggest that fun should be important is they'll say fun is frivolous. Mm-hmm. I don't have time for fun. There's too many horrible problems in the world. Or they'll say fun is just for the privileged. You have to have a lot of money to have fun. Mm-hmm. These kind of pushbacks. And I think you need to have your basic needs met to be able to think about anything beyond survival. So just laying that as the baseline. But once you have that taken care of, I think that we have a greater ability than we realize to have fun. And there's a number of reasons that that's very good. And I would say essential for our happiness and health. One is that it energizes us, so we have more energy for all of the challenges life faces. Yeah. It actually boosts our resilience. There's something called the broaden and build theory of positive emotion, which puts forth the idea that when you have a positive experience in the moment, it doesn't just feel good in that moment. It fills up your reserves so that you can cope with future periods of stress. Really important during the pandemic. There's also the fact that when we have fun with people, we see them as human beings. We don't see them as adversaries or someone from a different political party or with different beliefs. They're people. And that is a really powerful tool for making the world a better place and actually tackling some problems. And then one thing I was really interested in as a science journalist, and you know, I have type 1 diabetes, so I'm very interested in the body's hormonal system, is just the effects that fun, in the sense of playful connected flow, can have us on us physically. And just two things to highlight. One is that stress and anxiety are very bad for us physically. They result in an increase in a hormone called cortisol, which is there to help us respond to and survive physical threats, but over time can increase our risk for things like type 2 diabetes, you know, heart disease, heart attacks, stroke, there's dementia. I mean, the list goes on. So anything that reduces our stress is actually good for us physically. And when we're having fun and we're in a state of playful, connected flow, we're not anxious, we're not stressed, we're not ruminating about the past. We are actually in a very open, relaxed state while also being very energized. So I think that that suggests that it actually is quite good for us physically. And then the other thing I would touch on is that we all know that loneliness and isolation feel bad. I mean, dear God, do we know that after these 2 years? But they don't just feel bad. They're actually extremely bad for us physically. Loneliness and isolation, they affect our bodies down to the level at which our genes are expressed, which means which genes get turned on when. And that affects our risk for disease. So I have a quote in my book from one researcher who talks about loneliness and isolation as being a fertilizer for other diseases. Mm-hmm. And there's research suggesting it's the health risks of being lonely and isolated are comparable to those of smoking 15 cigarettes a day. So it's really bad for us. So again, when we're having fun with people, we are connected with them. We don't feel lonely. We don't feel isolated. So I don't think it's crazy to say that fun might actually be a health intervention. And one that's free and actually accessible to us. If you start viewing life through the lens of playful, connected flow, you start to realize you don't need to go on an exotic vacation or spend a ton of money. Just as one anecdote to close with, I recently heard a story from someone who told me he had 2 full hours of true fun doing nothing more than just sitting on a park bench with his nephew trying to catch falling leaves. And when he told me that, I was like, you made the metaphor literal. Like, opportunities. We just need to learn how to grab them.
Right. Oh, that's a beautiful, beautiful image. Okay. So we're starting to get a lot of questions from the audience. And so the first one is, Catherine, did the pandemic change your relationship with your phone? I.e. with increased physical isolation, did social media, digital junk food, become more valuable to you?
Hate social media. So no, that social media, not new doom scrolling. Yes, guilty. I also think that I became much more grateful for technology. I mean, again, I never was a technology hater. I just think we need to be more intentional about how we use it so that we are the ones in control. So I would say I became much more grateful for it. I used it in a lot of new ways. Like my music friends and I made like music videos using this app called Acapella with each other. And that actually was great because it gave us a way to have playful connected flow. So I think it did in the sense that it changed my relationship in the sense that I found some new ways to make it useful. And then I also recognized that, you know, it's harder than ever to not spend most of our waking life on screens. And so one of my personal priorities, like going forward, because this past couple months have been really intense with book stuff, is just to spend less time on screens, because it does feel so different to interact with people in real life.
Right. Okay. Another question. In your example about learning the guitar, was it fun because there were other people learning at the same time? Could you have achieved fun in an online class?
I think it would have been less fun in an online class for a technical reason, which is that Zoom and music don't mix. You can't simultaneously play together. And I think, well, I know part of the joy of making music with other people is getting to make music with them, you know? But it's interesting because in my guitar class, the experience meant so much to us that we kept doing it over Zoom for the whole pandemic, even though we couldn't play together. And we basically just put ourselves on mute and listened to our teacher play. But there was still this sense of connection that meant enough that we carried it forward. I think you could, you know, I've spoken to people who have derived a lot of fun actually from, God help me, improv comedy classes online. I don't know how they do that. So I think there's context in which you can have fun through the computer and online. But in my experience personally, it always pales in comparison to the experience of when you're actually in person with people. So yeah, right. I think it did contribute to it to have the people around.
So maybe you can make the best of it and it's better than nothing. But if you were going to say, would it be better in real life? The answer is you're going to feel that sense of connection more in real life.
Yeah. And as I think about it, I think part of it is like, if you're on a Zoom call, you don't have those little moments where you have the side conversation or you don't have the shared joke because everyone's on mute. You can't have those little interstitial moments that you don't fully recognize are very much conducive, like responsible for the fun. We focus again too much on the skill. You could go on YouTube and become much better at guitar than I am pretty quickly, but you wouldn't necessarily have had the fun of the experience of being in the group.
Right. Well, back to because I think so much about the five senses and the sensuality. It's like, it's the way people smell. It's just, it's putting your hand on their back. It's feeling the vibrations in the air from other people's instruments. Like all these things are, dramatically affecting our experience. Here's another question. I love planning my mother's 75th surprise birthday party. I found arranging and planning everything great fun. Then more fun, tricking her into getting there. Then the party itself was fun. Could the planning be a fun magnet for me? I do love planning and hosting parties. Okay, yeah, so how do you think about it? That kind of experience, the planning and the hosting, how do you think about that in true fun?
We're going to get really in the details of the words, which I love. Yeah, I think that those, yes. So I after I wrote the book, actually, I was inspired by you, Gretchen. I made a fun personality quiz because I love the four tendencies. So I made a fun personality quiz. And one of the personality types is fun organizers, which I am definitely myself, which is people who really do find a lot of fun in creating fun experiences for other people. So I think if I wanted to get really like kind of pointlessly detailed about it, I might say, okay, when you're doing the planning, that's more the anticipation, and then but you're anticipating the shared experience with your mom. But I don't think we really need to get that into the weeds with it. I think that probably the person who asked that question would have said that the experience of the reveal and the party and seeing their mom's face probably was the most fun part of it. But it also sounds like that planning part was really enjoyable, and getting to anticipate that and looking forward to her reaction was its own source of joy.
So, right. Yeah. And if you want to take my quiz, go to quiz.gretchenrubin.com. I love for people to take my quiz. Okay.
Obliger.
Yeah, you are?
No, you're an obliger. I'm a questioner.
I'm an upholder.
Oh, I'm sorry, an upholder. Excuse me.
Oh, no. Yeah.
How embarrassing.
I know. Everybody take the quiz. It's so fun. I love a quiz. And the fun quiz is really fun, too. Someone says, you've covered a lot of how to figure out what is true fun, but what are the benefits you found, scientific or otherwise? Well, you talked about that already. What is the power it has on our lives? So, yeah, it's the power of fun. What is the power?
So we did just allude, or I just alluded to some of those, and the way that it actually is good for our mental and our physical health. I guess I didn't talk about creativity and productivity, but it also is very good for both those things. But I think ultimately the power of fun is that, as the subtitle says, it makes us feel alive.
Mm-hmm. You know,
it makes us present for our brief moment on this planet. And in one of my not so fun moments of pleasure reading, as it were, the other weekend, I was reading an article about a book called The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying.
Oh, yes. That's.
Yeah. And I bring this up because I think a lot of times, Americans in particular, we seem to feel guilty about enjoying our own lives, like we don't deserve to, or we feel very uncomfortable with that. It seems selfish and self-indulgent in a bad way. But one of the top 5 regrets shared by people who were dying with the palliative care worker who wrote the book was, I wish I'd let myself be happy. So, and I think that when we're having fun, we are invariably happy. And so in a way, the path to happiness, which as you well know, can seem really abstract, right?
Right.
It lies through the everyday experience of fun. So I can talk to you about endocrinology and cortisol and creativity and productivity and memory making, all this stuff. But at the end of the day, the moments in which we have fun are the moments in which we feel truly alive. That's its power.
That's a power. What about games?
What about them?
What about games? Well, in games, you're trying to win. Like, is chess fun because it's more absorbing, or no, that's not fun because it's judgment. Like, how do you think? I know you don't want to get into definitions, but
I just got very excited. So I think that that goes to the fact that for some people, games are really fun. And some people are like, oh my God, the idea of going to a board game cafe is just, you know, God help me. And then I think for people who do like games, there's different, and we were talking about the characteristics, like the fun factors. Some people like the competitive element a lot more. But then I just heard from someone today who was saying, I've noticed that I like games, but the moment it becomes too competitive, I don't like it. Then there's different types of games. Like, I love Taboo because I actually feel like I can let go and just kind of have fun with it. I hate games like chess because I feel like my whole freaking life is an exercise in taxing my working memory, and my brain is so tired at the end of the day. So if you're like, let's play a game and let's anticipate the other person's move 10 moves in advance, I'm like, that is the worst. No, thank you. They may also be alluding to video games, because a lot of people, you know, they say, well, what about gaming? That's on a screen. So I think, again, it's personal. So I can't tell you what gives you playful connected flow. You only know that for yourself. But I will say, I think that there's definitely a common theme with video games where you're actually interacting with people through the headset and you're actually doing stuff together. That seems to be different for people's experience than playing something alone a lot of the time. Whereas where playing alone might be enjoyable. You might want to do that to, you know, not too much, but to the point where it's still enjoyable to you. But the true fun element, I think, could happen if you're playing with friends, you know, in a multiplayer game and you're using the game as a conduit for fun. It gives a nice structure, what I think of as a playground, which is a structure that helps us let go and shed our inhibitions and get into this state of playful connected flow.
And you could be sort of in an imaginary landscape that you're exploring. It's interesting to think about how they're not just one thing. There's many different types. I remember talking to a guy who played those like really intense games, and he was like, the more rules there were, like, he found it fun to kind of master the rules, these very complex rules. And I'm like anything past Uno, I'm just like, it's too, I don't even want to get into it. So again, it's like, we all have to find our own. What is the funniest thing? Like, is there anything somebody said to you like, oh, I really find this fun? And you're just like, I would not have seen that coming. Like, I know I use fun in just a much more colloquial way. And what's surprising to me is how many people enjoy ironing. Like, a lot of people just like, they find it to be like kind of a treat. It's kind of a healthy treat for them. And I'm like, okay, I would not have thought that. Is there anything where you thought, wow, that's a, or really just sort of out of the box.
One thing that just pops up again and again and again to the point that I'm like, maybe this one thing is true fun for everybody. I don't know. And that thing, Gretchen, pickleball. Pickleball. People freaking love pickleball.
Well, and why do you think it is that?
Well, I mean, first of all, it's called the name. Pickleball.
Yeah, the name. That's okay.
Doing it some favors. I've never played. I actually ordered myself a pickleball set because I'm so intrigued by why everyone finds this so fun. But from what I understand, I think there is the fact that from what I've heard, it's easier than tennis. There's something like built in playfully absurd about it because it's called pickleball and it's got
right.
at least the rackets I bought like were very colorful and kind of fun looking. I don't know. I think, and it's the novelty. It's like a new thing to do. But I will say I've since learned that it's one of the fastest growing sports in America. There is a new magazine that's coming out devoted to pickleball. I literally today was asked by an editor I used to write for, oh, the Oprah magazine, if I was still doing freelance assignments. Why? She wanted me to write an article for the pickleball magazine. So pickleball.
There you go.
Forget the playful
connection. Let's all try pickleball. Okay. Yeah. And someone says, not a question so much as a comment. Thank you for recognizing the importance of this topic. Many of us may actually need permission and encouragement to prioritize fun for all of its secondary gains. Yeah, so what do you think about that? Like this idea of people, well, you said it before that people feel like, you know, that it's selfish or maybe in a world full of suffering and injustice, it's not appropriate to think about something like fun. But if people are sort of like just, maybe they just feel like they should be racing around and crossing things off their to-do list. How do you think about it? Is there kind of a mindset or kind of a mantra that you suggest that people do to kind of keep, get them to return to this pursuit of true fun?
Well, I'd say one thing I would suggest is to not see it as all or nothing. It's not like you have to, you know, abandon your responsibilities and
right.
burn your to-do list and like leave your children because now you're
right.
this fun person.
Right.
Which, side note, being a fun person is not genetically determined. It really is to do with your attitude. So kind of tying it together. Yeah, we can change how we approach life to become more fun. But yeah, it's not all or nothing. So I would say, why not just experiment with it? Right? You don't even need to commit to it beyond a week from now. Just experiment with carving out a little time in your schedule to do something that's just for you or that you'll get a kick out of or that delights you. And delight is actually a wonderful way to get started on this if you kind of don't know where to start. I read a book called The Book of Delights by this poet named Ross Gay.
Yes.
Yeah. Who's just, he himself appears, he seems to be a delight. Every time I hear his voice, I just am delighted. And the idea of that is simply that when you go around about your day, you just make a point of noticing things that delight you. And when you do, you ideally stick a finger in the air and you say out loud, delight. And that's actually, there's scientific validation for why the physical, accompanying an observation with a physical gesture and then saying it out loud and naming it makes it more effective. And it's a technique that you can use to get in the habit of savoring the positive things in your life, which in turn has been proven to boost your resilience and reduce anxiety and just make us feel better. It's even better if you share it with someone. So, for example, I've started delight text chains with a lot of different friends, and I've been doing it with my mailing list and actually on my webinars, like encouraging people to share delights with each other. And I think it's a lovely use of technology because it actually helps you connect with the people you care about in a way that's easy and that begins to shift your focus from all of the negative things in life and all your to-dos and all the burdens and begin to see things a little bit more positively, not in a Pollyanna-ish way, but in the sense that our brains are naturally always going to go to the negative because that is how our species has survived. We need to be aware of threats because they might kill us. So we're always going to read the negative news story. We're always going to feel like there's more for us to do on our to-do list. It takes work to shift yourself over in this direction. And I found that this delight practice is an easy way to kind of begin to bring more lightness into your life. So I'd suggest just playing around with little things like that, not writing off as fun, as frivolous. You might actually literally want to write out a permission slip for yourself. Some people have done that. Because I do think that's a really common obstacle when it comes to happiness or fun, right? But it's really important. And I think once you begin to feel it again, you probably don't even remember what it really feels like. Once you feel and get a taste of fun, you'll I hope, come along with me. I think it's like getting over that initial hurdle where you have one of those experiences and you're like, oh my God, now I know to call that fun. And that felt so good. I want more of it. And look at this. It's making me better able to do all those things on my to-do list. I'm not as overwhelmed. I know personally, I'm a much better partner and a much better parent and a friend when I'm having enough fun.
Well, a question that I have often posed to myself and to other people about fun, and again, using it in a colloquial way, not in the specific way that you're using it, because I feel like a lot of adults sort of have lost their sense of fun and don't even really know how to have fun. And so I would often say, well, what did you do for fun when you were 10 years old? Because something that you did when you were 10 years old is probably something that you might enjoy now. I mean, maybe adapted to adult circumstances. And certainly I found in my life that many of the things that I do for fun, like in my way of fun, maybe not the connected, playful flow way, but in a general way, are very much exactly the kinds of things that I did as a 10-year-old. Do you think that for some people looking back in childhood or are there ways to sort of like try to pick through your own experiences and past to sort of, again, to find those fun magnets that would be helpful?
I think in some cases it's useful to look back at childhood, but I think it depends on what your childhood was like, you know? So I think a lot of times, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Right. Like people will say, oh, Catherine's suggesting we just recapture our childlike spirit. And I'm like, well, yes, I guess so, but a certain kind of childlike spirit. So for some people, when they reflect on their past fun experiences, there will be a bunch coming from childhood. But for other people, that might not be where they come from. Yes. You might actually be surprised. I mean, just to give some examples to contextualize like how mundane these things can be and how they can be any part of your life. Like people shared things with me from childhood that were things like going out in the rain with my grandfather without an umbrella and deliberately getting soaked. Like it was just this little moment that just stood out all those years later as being fun. Or someone told me about she'd squished mud through her toes with her friend Margaret. She wasn't exactly sure why that was so fun. She thought maybe the messiness of it and the presence of Margaret, but it was like really fun. But other people said, you know, this is again the summer of 2020, peak pandemic lockdown. You know, I had fun yesterday playing catch with a particularly exuberant dog. Or another woman told me, I started to learn the drums when I was 49 years old. And now whenever I go to the basement to practice, my husband and two sons drop whatever they're doing and they come down to the basement and we have an informal jam session. And I can't tell you what joy and playfulness this experience brings to me. And I was like, that was like that week, you know? I don't know if she liked music when she was a kid. So I guess what I'm saying is for some people, yes, it might be useful to reflect back on childhood, but don't feel like you're a fun failure if you can't think of something from childhood that seems at all appealing to you now. We don't have to do that.
And you have these questions that maybe I'll just run through really quick since I have it right in front of me about these prompts about like that might be thought provoking. I'm curious about, I'd like to try, I'd like to get better at. It might sound silly, but I'd love to. And here's the one that you said before, things I always say I want to do or learn, but supposedly don't have time for. I feel alive when. So these are all very helpful questions to sort of like, if you sort of are like, I don't know, you know, there's fun for the whole family. I think it's Jerry Seinfeld who said there's no such thing as fun for the whole family. As ways to sort of start to think about if you feel a little rusty about.
Yeah. I think the other thing to recognize, you know, to pull up my slide again, like, yeah, it's great if you end up in the center here, but what we're really trying to do is just shift our focus. For some reason, this is always negative. Like I'm always pointing this direction when I'm like, this is fear and anxiety, but we're trying to like just orient ourselves, like use this as a North Star. It doesn't matter if you're always heading directly there.
Sure.
I mean, one example, like if you're feeling totally stumped about anything you could do for fun at all, especially if you are feeling I'm very COVID cautious and I'm like not really leaving my house much. Just ask yourself something you're curious about learning. Don't worry about the connection, all the other stuff. Like my husband and I actually had a legitimately fun experience a couple of years ago. And Gretchen, I know you will appreciate this with the ironing anecdote where we were like, how do you fold a fitted sheet? Like how do people fold? We spent, I don't know, 45 minutes watching YouTube videos with like queen sheets, like trying to this day, I actually enjoy folding fitted sheets. I'm not going to say that's full on fun, but like, it's a little, you know, we can learn little things like that. Or I learned to chop an onion at some point.
Right,
and now every
time
I chop an onion, I'm like, I know how to do this. So I
don't
think
it silly.
Yeah. Or you don't need to stress out about like hitting all three of those targets. Just the point is to just do stuff and get out there, you know, off our couch and try things and not care too much about the outcome. And if it happens to result in that magical confluence of playful connected flow, great. But even if it doesn't, you're going to be headed in the right direction towards a more joyful existence.
Well, now that you're saying this, I'm realizing that something I do that I find tremendously fun, but my sister does not. So my sister, and if people have heard the Happier with Gretchen Rubin podcast, she's my co-host. So my sister is clutter blind. Like, she really doesn't see clutter. It doesn't weigh on her. She would not close a cabinet door in her life if she didn't live with other people. But, and I love to kind of like organize and tidy. I find it very relaxing. And so whenever I go to her house in Los Angeles, she'll let me tidy up her office, tidy up her guest room, clean out her closet, whatever. And I find it tremendously fun. It's like playing at the dollhouse, and it's like, it's not my stuff. So it's not emotionally charged for me. And it's just like, we're giving these things away and putting this in the recycling, and, you know. And she just lets me do it because she knows I find it so fun, and I get, and it's playful and it's connected and it's flow for me. And she, you know, she does it too. And she gets a kick out of it because it's just so absurd what we're doing. but I never really thought about why it was that I find that to be so fun. Because it's like your fitted sheet. It's just something that's
just very satisfying. But it's also nice that you have, it is a special shared experience with your sister. I would imagine, I believe that you like to organize even on your own on Desert Island. You would enjoy that, right? But I think it seems like there's something additionally fun.
Absolutely.
The fact that it's your sister, and that there's such a contrast between the two approaches, the absurdity of that.
No, if we just laugh, you know, like, it's just funny. Like, yes, it is. And it does show you how there, even something that's very enjoyable when you do it on your own, there does that element of kind of silliness and sharing, just brings, as you point out in the book, you know, just brings it to a new level. That's pretty hard to get on your own, but comes much more easily with other people. Well, Catherine, we are out of time. So why don't you, if there's just sort of like one thing that you would have people take away about the power of fun, as they're thinking about the power of fun in their own lives and trying to feel that sense of being alive again, what's kind of your final thought?
I feel like I've said a lot of my final thoughts, but I think it's really to experiment with it. Come at this with a playful attitude and just see if you notice, like become more aware of your own experiences in your day. Pay attention to little tiny moments of playfulness or connection or flow. So perhaps my suggestion would be tonight, as people get ready to go to bed, scan through your day and just see if there were any experiences like that. And if they did happen at once, but even just on their own, because you may start to notice that you're already having more fun than you give yourself credit for. So for example, when I go to bed tonight, I can say, all right, let me think about my day. Well, I just got to have an engaging conversation with you and hear questions from people in the audience and be playful together. I just had fun, you know? But I think naming it as such allows us to benefit from it in a way that if we don't name it and we don't do that little scan, it could just kind of float on by and we don't fully get to savor it and enjoy it. We'll ruminate on the bad stuff. Like, we will totally keep, no problem doing that. But how often do we actually savor what's good? So I think that would be something I would suggest.
Wonderful. And I think we all need to try pickleball, clearly.
Yeah, I mean, we can
and get the
back.
Magazine. Yes. Well, Catherine, thank you so much. This is such a wonderful conversation.
Thank you so much for doing this with me. It's a real, real honor and a treat for me.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.